Cunningham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Pillsbury Company Foundation, caring for the community by giving kids a loving lift.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. The more people who click and join at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org right now, the less time Minnesota Public Radio will spend on air fundraising. And everybody's entered in a special giveaway. Some might call this bribery, but this being Minnesota, we just call it nice.
Good afternoon and welcome back to our special edition of Midday. I'm Gary Eichten, and this afternoon we're broadcasting live from the Ted Mann Concert Hall at the University of Minnesota. This is Founders Week at the U, celebrating the university's 150th birthday. Way back in 1851, before Minnesota was even a state, Minnesota had its very own university. From that first class of 20 students, the U has grown into one of the largest universities in the nation. Professors here at the U have quite literally changed history. And over the years, the university has served as a unifying force for the entire state. The U has been educating Minnesota's sons and daughters, and increasingly moms and dads. And it's been reaching out across the state to share with all Minnesotans the expertise developed here at the U. By any measure, the University of Minnesota has made good use of its first 150 years. But what about the future? What will the future hold for the university? What should the future hold for the university? Today, we've gathered together some 75 community leaders to discuss their vision for the University of Minnesota. We'll be hearing from them during this hour of Midday. Also with us is a panel of policymakers, including University of Minnesota President Mark Udoff, former Governor Wendell Anderson, the chairs of the legislature's higher education committees, and Minnesota State Finance Commissioner. We'll be getting their reactions next hour to what we're hearing this hour. Today's forum is produced by Minnesota Public Radio's Civic Journalism Initiative. So let's get started. And those of you here in the audience, don't be shy. You're the folks we want to hear from today. We're interested in what your vision for the U might be. Len Witt of our Civic Journalism Initiative and Tim Pugmire of Minnesota Public Radio News are standing by with microphones so we can get you on the air and get your comments heard. And let me suggest that we start with this big issue, if we could. It's been reported that there are only four public universities that really amount to full-service schools: U of M, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and Florida. The U has far more degree programs than any other school in the Big Ten, nearly 500, with apparently the closest being Indiana, way back at 330 degree programs. Now, given financial restraints, given the continuing demand for excellence, the question I'd like to start with is whether the university should pare back, give up on trying to be all things to all people, and narrow its focus down the road. Len Witt, you want to get things started there?
Yeah, I'm with Jessica Phillips, and she's one of the regents for the University of Minnesota, and she's a graduate from Morris.
Thanks, Len. As Len mentioned, I'm serving on the Board of Regents. It's actually my last week. And both from the perspective as a regent and an alumnus and a citizen of the state, I think it's extremely important question. I believe that we need to continue to provide access to the citizens of Minnesota. This university was founded as a land-grant institution. And what that means to me is that we help provide access to higher education for the citizens of the state, citizens of the state and beyond. That's something that this university was founded on, and I think it's a mission that we need to focus on as we continue into the 21st century.
Do you think, before you run there, do you think, though, that the university needs to offer its citizens all the programs it's currently offering?
I think, as we're talking today about vision, and I think the vision is sort of a journey rather than a destination, and that's going to change as we move forward in the next 150 years. So to some extent, we do need to focus. The president of the university, President Udoff, and he might talk about this a little bit later, has developed a compact process with the colleges. What that means is he works with the leadership of the colleges on where they want to focus their resources. So it really links planning and budgeting. You can move dollars away from those programs or initiatives that maybe have not been successful and move those dollars towards programs that are more successful. So in a sense, I think that happens through this process, and it's always something that we need to continue to work on.
Tim?
You're
Gary, I'm with Ann Flom, who is the sesquicentennial historian here at the University of Minnesota, for a little perspective on how we got to this point of such a broad operation here at the university.
The university owes its breadth to the probably the most important decision in the 19th century, and I think it's been important in the 20th century and the 21st century, and it was Governor Pillsbury's decision when land grant money was available in 1868. Minnesota took up the option then. We created one institution, so we are both the research university and the land grant university, and I think that's been extremely efficient. We are also one of the few major public universities located in an urban and metropolitan area. That has strategic advantages in two important ways, I think. One is that students have access from all of our campuses to a remarkable participation in public affairs, civic affairs, professional activities. They can earn and learn at the same time. Second advantage is the having the veterinary medicine, agriculture, biological sciences, and medical sciences in the same institution, which as a land-grant and research institution we do. It was important in the 19th and 20th centuries and is absolutely crucial in the 21st century. So I think big is efficient and big is strategic.
Glenn?
Hi, I'm with Dean Anderson. He's a grad student at the Carlson School of Management here at the U.
Thank you. In terms of vision, you know, actually I'm an undergrad here and a grad student. I actually came back to Minnesota because Minnesota's home. I was working abroad and I had the opportunity to further my education, and I knew I wanted to go to a good school. I wanted to go to a school that could offer me so much. And in fact, when I was invited to this town hall, I said, well, what is the vision? And then I thought, what do I get out of it? And I thought, well, in putting it in one succinct phrase, it's a community integrated, human capital generating institution. In terms of it serves the state as a publicly funded university, it has its customers and its products as its main output, being students such as myself, and it was formed on the history and the tradition, as we just heard, that has to be built on and respected. In terms of how we could do that, well, the strategic advantage of being in a community is huge. Coming from the business school, I've actually experienced this personally. I can go out and I can learn from the community leaders, be they public or private, and find out what's going on and then apply that to my own career, my own experiential learning going forward. But that also means that we have a mission that we have to serve and build lines of communication with that community in terms of meeting their needs and demands as a public institution. Thank you.
Kim?
Gary, I'm with Freeman Wickland, Executive Director of Compassionate Action for Animals.
I come here not only as executive director, but also as an alumni here. I graduated with a degree in nutrition from the University of Minnesota. And I think what the university really needs to do in terms of the scope of its education and its research is look at what can it do to serve the citizens of Minnesota and the country as a whole. And I think there's three real key areas that it could focus on. The first one is making sure it serves the people and not corporate interests. Historically, in the United States, corporations were not allowed to, they were chartered with a specific purpose and a specific time limit. They had a board of directors that was responsible for their own actions and could go to jail if they violated the law. They had a lot of limits placed on them. Last year, the university accepted $10 million from Cargill, Inc. to build a genomic institute facility. And $115 million of public funds are going to be used to further complete that project. Now, in this situation, Cargill is going to have complete access to all the research that's available from that institution. And I don't know why that it's in the public interest to fund Cargill's research. Secondly, I don't know if genetically manipulating plants and animals is healthy, considering the risks it poses to us and the unknowns about the safety involved.
Okay, so, point two then?
Okay, the second point, thank you, is that we need to focus more on, right now we do a lot of animal research, and I believe that it is dangerous to both people as well as, first it's dangerous to people, and historically, people in smoking tobacco industries used animal research to prove that tobacco was harmless. Clinical studies, on the other hand, were showing that it's safe. What we need to do is focus more on ethical human-based research like clinical studies, epidemiology, in vitro tests using human tissues. And I know here at the University of Minnesota, the Student Organization for Animal Rights has already introduced a proposal to abolish primate research. And I think that the university should really look at that as a good first step towards getting a science that is healthy for people, is relevant to people, and is going to serve the public interest. The third thing I would think that the university needs to focus on, and final, for, is that we need to look at the reality of the environmental problems that we as young people and youth face today, which is we live in a finite world which has a limited number of resources that are available and a limited amount of ability to absorb the waste and neutralize them that we create. And here we have, yet despite these limits, we have a growing human population, we are consuming more resources than ever, and we have an economy that is growth-driven, which continues to use these things. So what we need to do is look at research and education that works on trying to stabilize human population, trying to create more organic, sustainable farming instead of chemical, pesticide-laden factory agribusiness that uses resources.
All right, let's give somebody else a chance to comment then, too. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Len.
Hi, I'm with Mike Young, and he's with AFSCME. Hi, thanks, Len. AFSCME represents about 3,500 clerical, technical, and healthcare workers at the university. And whatever direction the university takes, we're going to be there keeping this place running from day to day. And so our vision for the university is of an organization that respects its workforce, both in how we're treated in the workplace and in our paychecks. The university currently pays clerical, technical, and healthcare workers less than our counterparts at the state of Minnesota, and we need to see that change. We need to be paid a living wage. We're hard-working people, and we work full-time for the university. We deserve to be able to survive on what we make here.
Do you think the university ought to narrow its focus? That's kind of the question we're talking about right now.
You know, our position on that would probably be no, because that might involve loss of jobs for us. But like I said, wherever the university goes, we're going to be there. And our goal is to see that that the university pays us a living wage and treats us with the dignity that our work demands.
Okay. Tim?
Gary, I have Harry Boyk, co-director of the Center for Democracy and Citizenship at the Humphrey Institute.
I'm also involved with something called the Civic Engagement Task Force, which was charged by Bob Brunix, the provost, to take a comprehensive look at the land-grant mission and strengthening civic engagement across all aspects of the U. This returns us to our roots. It also propels us to the future. And I would say that civic engagement and, more broadly, public deliberation of the sort that NPR has been sponsoring this week is both a goal and a process to get to the goal. One of the discussions in the task force is how to create places at the U and with the university in partnership with others where people of different points of view learn to engage each other in a serious, sustained, deliberative discussion. I talked to a rural woman once in Minnesota in Rice who said, "We quarrel so much these days because we've lost the art of argument." And I think that goes to the point that we have very polarized soundbite public discourse in our time. We need to develop the practices of sustained engagement with other points of view. And the university can really become, in many ways, a public forum for that. I would also say, on tough issues, from bioengineering to cultural diversity to the nature of schools and the crisis facing inner city communities, all sorts of questions, but we need to develop the arts of discussion and deliberation. That process of deliberation, of citizen forums, of discussion across the university is also how we're going to successfully set priorities in the future. I think the evidence over the last decade in the citizen engagement movement broadly, something like Oregon Health Decisions, is that institutions can take on tough priority setting if they have a wide buy-in and deliberative process, which gives authority to the goals that are set. In fact, at the U, under Ken Cutter's leadership in the 80s, the university made very tough decisions about priorities for the library system by involving all sorts of units in a deliberative, sustained process over time. So I think both as a goal and as a process for getting to the goal, we need to return the art of public conversation and deliberation.
Okay. Quick show of hands here. Maybe we should move on to another subject. Nobody seems too interested in the big, well, there's a fellow back there, but how many people think the university should kind of essentially continue, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, pursuing a goal of offering a broad range of offerings, as it does now, in some cases far more than any other Big Ten university? Everybody agree that that's should be the long-term mission of the U, or is there anybody who disagrees, thinks it's time to narrow the focus? Going once, going...
Hi, I'm here with Daniel Carr, and he's the president of the Collaborative, and which deals with a lot of high technical stuff. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, the Collaborative serves the business community of entrepreneurs, emerging growth companies, and investors. And as someone who, in the business community, we look to the university's vision primarily as human capital. I mean, educate our kids, help us find good workers, those kinds of things. Secondarily, yes, we want a strong research institution that helps build critical mass around the ability for these high-tech companies to grow. And Chris Mazur and President Udall are doing a great job in that area. But I do think that in the leadership demonstrated, for example, through the economic summit last fall, that Minnesota has to make some choices. As an economy that the summit came up with, we have to choose some specific clusters to invest in. Some of those clusters that have been talked about include data storage and networking, some software things, perhaps biotechnology, some other medical devices, a great area for technology. And the U can play a great role in that. But as the working group determined that we need to focus, we need to pick our clusters, perhaps the university is going to have to make some of those tough decisions too, which gets to your question, Gary, about can we be everything to everyone when we are still considered in a lot of the larger business community flyover land? Can our university try to be as big and great as that, but one of the largest in the nation? Of course, we have to continue to serve our missions of the land-grant institution, but we may have to make some tough choices. One last thing I'd like to add to this comment is, President Udall, you have a wonderful track record in this community already, and the business community will back a mandate to help support the effort in making that to happen. And I think the leadership that you demonstrated in the summit and through the academic or the athletic scandals and things like that can continue in this what could be difficult but also very opportunistic time of choosing where we're going to focus for a university.
Tim? This is Jay Miskowick, instructor of journalism at Minneapolis Community and Technical College.
If there are indeed some 500 degree-granting programs at the university, there probably is some room for consolidation there. But I think it's, maybe to respond directly to the person who just spoke, I think it's real disheartening, this kind of trend toward the corporate model at the university where things are governed by cost-benefit analysis. And if a program or a course doesn't have a real direct monetary value or outcome to it, it's not really important to teach. And I think that a university like this, of which I'm an alumnus, I would hope that it would do everything it could to maintain humanities-based and liberal arts education programs and not be so concerned about whether something fits into some economic cluster model.
Len?
Hi, I'm with Dean Barkley. He's the director of Minnesota Planning, and Dean, you might remember, was the person who really helped plan Governor Ventura's election.
Well, thank you very much. First of all, I spent 8 wonderful years at this institution, but I think we have to realize that situations do change in the last 150 years. What's different between when the university was founded and what we have now are 53 Minscu campuses also doing public education being state-funded, and I think it's a legitimate discussion of whether or not with the advent of Minscu and the services they're providing, are there some things that the U was originally told to do that now are being done at Minscu campuses or maybe should be done there? The general college debate is one of those issues, is whether it's time to really take a hard look of this duplication of systems we have, and are there some functions functions that the U has done that could be done at MNSCU to allow them to focus their resources on other things that MNSCU campuses really cannot do because the U is the only place that really strategically that should be done. So I think that is a legitimate argument with MNSCU is having that debate. Are there some things the U maybe really does not have to do anymore because of the MNSCU system?
That kind of leads us into where I'd like to go next with this, and that is that traditionally the U, for the most part, has welcomed all comers, followed a relatively low tuition policy. Question before the House now would be whether or not the university should move in a different direction, perhaps follow the Michigan model, if you would, raise tuition, raise admission standards, reduce the size of the university, and encourage students who might otherwise come here to go to one of the state universities or state colleges. Long term, would that be a good direction for the university to follow? Glenn?
I'm with Victoria Davis, and she's the education chair of the Ramsey County NAACP.
Good afternoon. It's actually the St. Paul NAACP. I just want to be clear on that so that my colleagues won't be upset. But I'd be remiss if I didn't use this opportunity to share with you a voice that may not be heard otherwise today. And I want to use my own experience here at the university as a prelude to my discussion of my view for the university. When I entered graduate school at the University of Minnesota in 1968, my advisor made it clear to me that his interest in me was to demonstrate diversity in enrollment to the federal source of the funding in the area of my study. However, the sense of self-worth instilled in me by my family and during my years at Spelman College challenged me to declare myself as more than a number. I determined that I would graduate with honors, and I did. This spoiled attempt to devalue me and to daunt my spirit, coupled with the growing needs of the youth that I interface with today, are the motivation of the vision that I offer today for our great university. I say our with a great sense of pride and ownership because it belongs to me too. My vision of the future for the university is that it moves ahead on dual tracks with neither impacted at the expense of the other. The first track would be to commit to the commitment and development and implementation and permanent support of a plan to make the university more diverse. The second is to continue to update course offerings and content that will prepare the people it serves to be effective contributors to the ever-changing world we live in. The inspiration for my thoughts on how to accomplish this are drawn from words spoken at a recent MNSCU press conference, wherein a spokesperson made the case for the proposed budget sent to the legislature. Let me focus on just two of his arguments. One was access. He said that the university had an obligation because of land grant stipulations to make the U of M accessible to Minnesotans. The U responded by placing campuses such that no resident would have to travel more than 35 miles to a campus. His comment, however, suggested that access was all about geography. My vision would call for a broadening of that view to include, but not be limited to, the removal of unnecessarily restrictive admission requirements, such as those being considered by the University of California. Secondly, a commitment to good counseling, which would allow for more sensible course selections so as to avoid the all-too-frequent quicksand traps that lure many of our students. And finally, to commit to a higher education rate for a higher graduation rate, for African-American students and other students of color. We can no longer afford to allow the imbalanced support of research over education. We are consistently building buildings for research, but not including enough classroom space. Thus, students are having to sit on the floor in calculus classes. And because of inadequate classroom space, students are at times having to choose whether to attend a class or take an exam because the two have been scheduled at the same time. The final focus thought is that relating to how he views, how the spokesperson at the press conference viewed the importance of education. He said that the success of a community is tied to the education of its people. I'd like to just suggest that African Americans represent a smaller number of students admitted to the university and an even smaller number of its graduates. Thus, the university must challenge itself to accept its share of responsibility for the lack of success in the African-American community. It has been said that the greatest inhumanity to man is not to dislike him, but rather to deny his existence. Therefore, I respectfully request that the university not only acknowledge our existence, but also our need for intellectual stimulation as a tool for success and survival.
Okay. Tim?
Gary, from the Minnesota Council of Churches, we have the Reverend Peg Chamberlain, Executive Director.
I think the question that you asked, Gary, and some of the discussion that I've been disturbed about is the assumption that we can come down on either access or excellence. It seems to me the university has two roles. The first we've talked about, the Land Grant Commission, which is to prepare an enlightened citizenry. And so access is absolutely essential. On the other hand, at the same time, the university is an economic engine for this state and for this region, both in terms of our research, but also in terms of the workforce that we produce. But those two things have to work together. One is about private wealth, but there is no private wealth without the commonwealth. So let us not, in our envisioning, separate out access and excellence as if they were two different things. Private wealth in this state and in this region requires a commonwealth. And so access is absolutely essential to that combined place. I don't know how to manage the question of all the number of degrees and so forth, but it has to happen in the context of that shared mission between access and excellence, between commonwealth and private wealth. And it has to be done in the public manner, such as Harry has spoken to before, because the commonwealth has to be part of the discussion.
Len?
Hi, I'm with David Lebedoff, and he's a former chair of the Board of Regents.
I wanted to comment first on the lady from the St. Paul NAACP. I agree with much of what she said, and I want to add to that list. It was a good list. I want to add to it the fact that I believe that the bulk of the minority population lives in the Twin City metro area. And discussing as an alternative that the undergraduate programs should be cut back and people should go outstate for their education may work for some people, but it's an economic hardship to tell people who live in the Twin Cities that they have to go elsewhere to get their education. Economic hardship, and I think a cultural hardship in many cases too, and I think that's a very, very good argument for the University of Minnesota. Because of the state's planning in the past, we have this huge major university in the middle of the Twin Cities to accommodate the populations there. And I think to abandon the successes that have been won there when the alternatives are not affordable to many would be a mistake. But we were asked today to discuss the future of the University of Minnesota. We know in this room, we may agree or disagree, we only know two things for certain about the future of the University of Minnesota. The first is that as the University of Minnesota goes, so goes the state of Minnesota. If the university flourishes, the state will flourish. If the university flounders, the state will fail economically. The second thing we know for certain is that the future of the University of Minnesota, on which depends the future of the state, is going to be determined this year by the Minnesota legislature and the governor of the state of Minnesota. I say this year because the governor, to his credit, has raised the issue of accountability, has raised the issue of spending, has made everyone concentrate on justifying their programs. I think that's admirable. I would criticize, however, the fact that the governor seems to want to cut everything back across the board. He talks about his own family as a model for many things. In a family, if you're trying to cut back, if you have hard times, you don't spend 10% less on food for the children and 10% less and stay one day less at Disney World. You cut out the trip to Disney World and you spend the money on food for your children. Because the University of Minnesota, and by praising the university, I mean to say nothing about the funding needs of other entities, but with the University of Minnesota, we are feeding the future of our children. And to cut that out would be tragic.
Okay. Well,
let me just hold it for 1 second. I have here the Pioneer Press from Tuesday of this week, in which they list the venture capital gifts to awards to Minnesota businesses. Over half of them, about $60 million for this quarter, was to medical technology companies. And I tell my friends in the business community, none of those companies would be here if it were not for the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Okay. Tim?
This is Vang Lee, who is the coordinator of the Asian Pacific American Learning Resource Center here at the university.
Thank you. I have been invited to come here to share my vision of the University of Minnesota, and I have been here at the university since 1991. I just want to thank you for those individuals that have mentioned about access, services, and particularly student of colors. I think that, you know, students today are the future of our workforce, and it is very important that for us to bring these individuals to the University of Minnesota, first thing first, we want to make sure that the very first day the student walk here on campus, they feel welcome, they get a sense of belonging, they get a sense of support, so that, and have access to all the resources and services here at the university to make sure that they're successful and graduate from the University of Minnesota. We have to, as we know that in the 21st century, you know, in a big campus at the University of Minnesota, it is a multicultural environment. We want to make sure we create the climates for these individuals, regardless of their background, cultural background, sexual orientation, et cetera. We want to make sure everyone is here as a multicultural world. Thank you.
Okay. Len?
Yeah, I'm with Amber Heckert.
Hi, Gary, if I could, I'm the president of the Asian American Student Cultural Center here at the University of Minnesota. I'm an undergraduate, so probably the first who's talked tonight this afternoon. And Gary, if I could, I'd like to kind of go back to your first question about mm-hmm. cutting back on programming. And I'm actually a resident of Wisconsin, and I had the opportunity to go to a lot of universities in Wisconsin, specifically the University of Madison, where I would have gotten a lot more scholarships since I am a resident of Wisconsin. But I did choose to come to Minnesota simply because of the diversity of programs that they have here, and the fact that I had a lot of friends who went into different colleges, smaller colleges, because they were very concentrated on the area of study that they're interested in. And then eventually they ended up having to go and transfer to another college because they changed their mind or they didn't like the programming. And the reason I choose the university is because of the diversity here on campus and the diversity of the programming. And also, if you cut back diversity of programming, I would just like to say that the Asian American Studies program is being currently worked on. It's not even a major yet, but it is being currently worked on by the professors that we have here. We have a lot of guest professors, such as Erica Lee and Catherine Choi from California. And I've taken a few of their classes, and if you cut back on programming like that, that's exactly the reason why I decided to come to the University of Minnesota. It's because of the diversity programs, multicultural, educational. I'm a speech communication major and a women's studies major. And when I started out in high school, I didn't even know women's studies existed. So without the programming here at the university, I probably wouldn't have chosen this university. And I'm really proud to be here. And so I don't think cutting back programming would be a really good idea.
Tim?
This is Jerry Fisher, who is the president of the University of Minnesota Foundation.
Thank you. I'd like to go to your second question about, do we want a University of Michigan type model versus what we've had?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key question is, do we have a university for Minnesota that fits with the Minnesota value system? Minnesotans have always distrusted elitism. Well, there's a lot of elitism at the University of Michigan. I lived in Michigan for most of my adult life, been here for the last 16 years, and the thing that impresses me is that the university, we've talked about it before, does the best job probably of any university in the country of balancing access with excellence. And the beauty of that is that we can provide excellence for everyone. And in the knowledge age, the information age, it seems to me access to higher education to our great teachers and researchers is going to be crucial to our ability to thrive, well, to survive and thrive, both as an economy and with the kind of quality of life that Minnesotans have valued in the past. So I think, you know, we are Michigan, Michigan State, and Wayne State, all in one. And it's tougher, and it perhaps costs more, to balance these values of the excellence of research, the access implied by land grant, and then to place the university both in the urban centers of the state and in the rural centers. I like a university, this tough issue of balancing the access and the excellence, because I think it fits with the Minnesota value system.
Another balancing issue, how do you see the U down the road in terms of teaching versus research? You hear the argument that, gosh, there are a lot of great profs here, but they spend all their time in a laboratory. Is that a good thing? Should they be in classrooms? Do we, again, try to find some nice balance here, teaching and research? Anybody got any thoughts on that? Have a woman in the back. Tim, go ahead.
I'm here with Jim Scheibel, Executive Director of Project for Pride in Living.
Well, first, I would like to applaud President Yunoff for having the task force and civic engagement. And I think instead of just thinking of teachers in classrooms, I think we need to look at the university and its campuses as the entire community. We need to not just look at the walls and the boundaries, but I know in the Phillips neighborhood and on the west side of St. Paul, we need good housing. People need access to health care. We definitely need good schools, and people are looking for good job training. And I think we should look at the university in 10 and 20 years saying, not how many degrees there are or how many programs, but what difference has really been made in our working environment and in our neighborhoods, in our communities. No matter what the major, what we really need today is big citizens. We need strong civic leaders. We need active people in the community. And that can start, it starts in grade school, but it certainly can be nurtured at the University of Minnesota. And whether it's the undergrad program or the graduate program, I think every graduate should be walking out of this university and saying, what can I give back to the community? Whether it's immediately in the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps or some other kind of national service. But we need big citizens, and if we don't have change in our communities, it doesn't make any difference the number of professors or degrees that are awarded. The university's been part of this community for a long time. There's so many needs, and it can even be more in the future.
Glenn?
Hi, I'm with Jeff Dean, and he's a parent. His son, Brian, is a student at the University of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm also a graduate of the University of Minnesota, the College of Education, and my son is currently at the Global Campus in London. But I want to talk about my mom and dad, and it's sort of a, bear with me, it's a little bit of a personal testimonial, but I think it's to the point here. Mom and dad, both are graduates of this university, and my father came from South Minneapolis, and my mom came from Kenwood, and my dad's family was of modest means, and there was no expectation to go to the university in his family, and he was a bright kid, went to Washburn High, and somehow ended up here. He had an opportunity to come, and he came. And I think it's Morrill Hall used to have the college post office in it, and their hands literally touched for the first time when they were going to adjacent post boxes down there. And their union had to be approved by my grandfather, and my grandfather had pretty high standards, and it looked like this bright kid from Washburn had good prospects, and son of a gun, they got married. And so I have a great personal debt to the University of Minnesota, quite literally, and I really think that the access and excellence have to go together, and hope that that, and really think it's very important for the state that this does continue in the future for my son, for my daughter, and for their sons and daughters. Thanks a lot.
Jim?
Gary, I'm with Sam Schumann, who is Chancellor of the University of Minnesota Morris.
I guess I'd like to just say a little bit about these issues of access and excellence from the perspective of one of the university's campuses not in the Twin Cities. I think one of the reasons that American higher education is the envy of the world is because of the rich range of diverse institutions that our country offers. And I think certainly the University of Minnesota is extraordinary in the texture of the four campuses that we have and the center in Rochester. We have here in the Twin Cities a major Big Ten research land-grant institution in Duluth, a great comprehensive regional university by Great Lake, a polytechnic institution quite unique in Crookston, and in Morris, an institution that we think is rightly considered the best public liberal arts college in America. I think that range of institutions, each of which is very much focused on a very different and very particular mission, is a real treasure for the state of Minnesota. And my vision for the future of higher education in this state at the University of Minnesota is that we will keep those institutions each focused on doing what it does the very best. Thanks.
Glenn?
Hi, I'm with Dwayne Johnson, and he's chairman and CEO of the African Student Cultural Center.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to condemn Mr. Udoff on your work. Some of your work you've done here at the university since you've been here. I think you have very good management skills and leadership skills. And also, first of all, secondly, I would like to say that the university, I do agree, is a great institution, and it has been since its existence. However, I must bring up as a leader of a student culture center here on campus that multiculturalism here at the school, I believe, is on her deathbed. My vision is to see that the black student population increase. In the 1960s, there were only 100 black students on campus. Today, there's only 1,000. That only accounts for about 4% of the total student population. In the fall of 2000, there were only 200 incoming black freshmen. And right now, there's less than 35 black faculty on campus. The student culture centers here on campus are not getting the respect or the attention it deserves. If we are part of the University of Minnesota, then why are we located off the campus? And why isn't the administration doing a better job as far as the seeing that we're on the campus and we're serving the students so that the school can be more diverse and so that we can see to that there's a higher recruitment and a lesser retention rate of black freshmen and other students and other students of color leaving the campus after their first year? If the school wants to see that, then it has to realize that the black students and other students of color are an asset to the success of this school. Like Sister brought up here from the NAACP, we're located in an urban area. Right when you step off of the school, you're in North Minneapolis, South Minneapolis, that is predominantly African American and African or people of color. So these are some of the things I would like to see are my vision for the University of Minnesota, because today I can honestly say I would not send my kids to this school once I graduate because of the some of the things and the lack of diversity that's here on this campus. I would like to send my children to the school if the school can improve in these areas. Thank you.
Tim?
Another voice from outside the Twin Cities. This is Barbara Meising, Director of Outreach at University of Minnesota Crookston.
And this is to the question about balancing teaching and research. And actually, the tradition of a land-grant institution is that there is a third leg of that stool that we traditionally have called service, often referred to now as outreach, very much akin to civic engagement, as Harry Boyd was referencing. And what that means is that we, with a very intentional kind of way, connect the teaching and research of this great university with our citizens and with our communities. And we have hundreds, if not thousands, of ways that this university does that through the Extension Service, through our coordinate campuses, through our continuing education programs. That's where some of the real innovation and distance delivery of learning is happening. And so that third piece really helps to enhance and make meaning of the teaching and research, connecting it in a very real way with citizens and communities of the state.
Len?
Hi, I'm with Kevin Frizzell, and he's with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you. My comment really is the same as the previous speaker, and I guess I jumped up a little quick, but the League of Cities was actually part of the University of Minnesota from 1913 until 1974. A lot of us have been involved in this whole civic engagement process where we're trying to get citizens more meaningfully involved in public policy issues. And I think that the university in its research and outreach efforts could be even more helpful than it is today in helping us frame some of the difficult issues ahead of us. In an age of information overload, I think most of our citizens just really have a very difficult time sorting out the choices ahead of us. And as an example, I'll cite the current debate in the governor's budget over both K-12 education funding and also for the university itself. Aside from ideological predilections, how many of us really understand in any concrete way what's the difference between $50 million or $250 million in terms of the programs that would be delivered either to students or to residents of the state? We do find, and I think that the university produces a lot of very helpful research in a variety of areas, but I must also say that I think it could be strengthened by some more consolidation and a research agenda that collaborates with the community. The area that we're concerned about, urban affairs, for example, one can find research being done in a variety of divisions and departments and institutes around the university, and it's very difficult sometimes to know where one goes to access what one needs. So either some collaboration across departments or someone who's responsible for helping us access that research would be very helpful.
Ken?
This is Jacques Capel. He is president of Minnesota Technology.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a brief observation. I think one of the difficulties in this discussion is that I think we all want access and excellence to some degree, but I think we often confuse the needs and the cost of, for example, excellence in an undergraduate education and excellence in a research university. And competing on a research level on a national level, in a national level today is much more expensive than it has ever been. States like California recently invested $300 million in just one nanotechnology. New York 3 months ago invested $100 million in new technologies. So while we want to be the best research university in the country and while we want to provide access at the undergraduate level, we need to recognize we can't confuse these two terms, and the costs for each of them are vary widely.
Does it matter whether the U is number one, number five, number 20, number 100? Does that make a difference? Why? What difference does it make? As long as the kids are coming here and getting a good education.
Well, they've got opportunities elsewhere. My name is Tom Swain. I was invited here to talk about what my vision is for this institution. When President Udoff arrived on the scenes, he was challenged by the then state administration to improve the quality of this place as measured by, what is it, the National Research Council?
Yes.
Am I right on that one?
Yes.
And he was challenged, and the administration said, we'd like the university to be among the top five public universities. A vision that I subscribe heartily to. We weren't there then. I don't believe we're there now, although we're making headway under excellent leadership. In order to accomplish this, you have to fuel the engine. And the way we're currently discussing this subject, I don't think we're talking about what's needed in order to get us there. And I hope the panel will discuss this matter when the next hour comes on board.
What would you like, us to discuss, sir?
Well, what it's going to take to get us in that top five. Where I think we belong and where we've made a commitment to get to. That's okay. A worthy vision.
All right. Len?
Hi, I'm with Jane Brown. She's president of the Minnesota High Tech Association.
Hi. I just want to get back to some of the comments that were made early on just to make sure that there's not a misunderstanding. I completely agree with all of the early comments made about our focus, particularly what Dan Carr said, and I think it was perhaps a bit misunderstood. I don't think that Dan Carr was saying that we needed to bring focus by dropping humanities or any particular program or not liberal arts. What we have found in high tech is that some of our greatest entrepreneurs are actually liberal arts graduates, so we certainly would not want to limit that. I further want to pick up on what Dean Barclay said, and I think that's perhaps the trade-off that we should be looking at, and that is how can we mix and match with what Minsku offers with what the university can offer as perhaps a higher, second, third, and fourth years of college, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go out of the metro area to get your first year. I think there are trade-offs that we need to look at. The other piece that I feel that maybe is not being discussed is that we really are in a financial crisis right now for the university, and we're in a crisis for our position in attracting talented researchers and faculty, and probably most importantly, attracting world-class students here. And we have to have the talent and the programs here to do that. It is an economic engine, both feeding business and with our research, but most importantly, I think, with a very talented workforce.
Tim?
This is Marie Manthe, president of the Alumni Society School of Nursing.
Thank you. I've given a lot of thought to the question of my vision about the university, and I'd just like to point out, first of all, that within the academic health sciences, the University of Minnesota has always been a leader. It was the first baccalaureate school of nursing in the world, started in 1909. And it is now producing the doctorally prepared nurses who are staffing the educational institutions throughout the state that are producing nurses. We're facing a horrendous nursing shortage. The university is in an absolutely key position with a strong doctoral program that has to be kept strong. But the vision for me personally had to do with the work I did as an assistant director of nursing at the hospital in the late 60s. And we talk about research, education, and service as the major functions of the university. They all came together for me in the spirit of inquiry, intellect, and innovation that led to a remarkable revolution in the way nursing care is delivered in hospitals that has spread not only throughout the United States, it's called primary nursing, not only through the United States, but also worldwide. It wouldn't have happened if it weren't for that coming together of inquiry, intellect, and innovation that I think is a characteristic of a university.
Not a lot of time left, but let's get at least a couple more comments on. Len?
Hi, I'm with Christine Mazur, who's Vice President for Research at the university.
Thank you. Gary, I wanted to respond to your question about the balance between teaching and research, because I'm very concerned that we would identify that as being separate activities, because as the graduate dean, I know very well that our research programs are really vehicles for education as well as performing research. Our graduate students learn to be world-class researchers by performing that work in our faculty's laboratories around the university. So it's a real false competition to set up research versus education, because the research activities at a research university such as ours contribute to the education of that first-class researcher and scholar that the University of Minnesota is so well prepared to produce for the state.
Tim, a quick comment?
This is David Strom from the Taxpayers League of Minnesota.
Thank you, Tim. I was very disturbed to hear there was a theme that went on through a lot of this discussion, which was the University of Minnesota should try to be all things to all people and at the same time should try to be top five, excellent. I think those things are ultimately incompatible. That one of the things you have to do is bring what you have to bear at to the table, which is the University of Minnesota should focus on a mission of bringing excellence to Minnesotans. And the only way to do that is to choose. You have to focus. And the idea that you can be top five in 500 things is impossible. And I think it's very disturbing that people are trying to make those square the circle there. I think that the university really has to make some choices. And it's clear that an intellectual leap has yet to be made, that that has to be done.
We have covered a fair amount of ground. We have lots of ground to cover yet before our program is over, but we're about out of time for this hour. If you just joined us, this is a special edition of Midday coming to you here on Minnesota Public Radio. We're broadcasting live today from the Ted Mann Concert Hall in the West Bank of the University of Minnesota. Excuse me, this being Founders Week at the U, a week to celebrate the school's 150th birthday. We thought it would be interesting today to focus on what the future may hold for the U. We've been joined today by some 75 community leaders who've been sharing their vision for the university. Coming up next hour, we'll hear some more from our community leaders, and we'll also be joined by University President Mark Udoff, former Minnesota Governor and former University Regent Wendell Anderson, plus two key legislators and a key member of the Ventura administration to get their reactions to what we've been hearing. So do stay tuned. We'll be right back after some news headlines.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Mike Edgerly, and we'll return to Gary Eichten from the Ted Mann Concert Hall a little bit after 1 o'clock, after we check news headlines from National Public Radio and get regional headlines from Greta Cunningham in the St. Paul studios of Minnesota Public Radio. You're listening to Midday.
We know. Many of you have asked why our pledge drives aren't longer. Hey, we have radio to produce. Radio that we produce for you with the help of your support. I'm Catherine Lanfer, the host of Mid-Morning, here to remind you that one way we keep more programming and less pledging on the air is with our special two-day web pledge drive. So go right now.